In this episode, we speak with the founder and CEO of Papa, Andrew Parker. Papa provides vital social support by pairing older adults and families with Papa Pals, who are trained and vetted companions that provide a helping hand and an open ear, resulting in less loneliness and better health. Andrew and his family were struggling to balance the daily demands of life with supporting his grandfather, Joseph, whom they referred to affectionately as Papa. Founded in 2017 and headquartered in Miami, Papa is a manifestation of Andrew's vision of a world where no one has to go it alone. Before Papa, Andrew was VP of Health Systems at MD Live, a leading provider of virtual healthcare services in the US. Papa is backed by SoftBank, Tiger Global, Comcast Ventures, and other notable investors. I'm your host, RJ Lumba. We hope you enjoy the show. If you like the episode, click to follow.
RJ Lumba is the executive chairman of Market Insight Media and the managing partner of Growth Cap. He is the host of Great Entrepreneurs, a podcast for driven entrepreneurs and business owners. Our podcast covers all topics related to the entrepreneurial journey, from ideation to execution to optimization and to reaping the rewards of a well-run business. In the minutes ahead, we'll share with you unique insights and tactics from some of today's most accomplished and inspiring entrepreneurs.
Andrew, great to chat with you today. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
So very excited to talk to you about Papa because you're solving a problem that so many people face, whether it's they themselves or their family members. Tell us about the problem Papa solves.
So Papa is an end-to-end human connection platform. I started the company originally to help my grandfather, my Papa, hence where the name came from. And I thought Papa doesn't need a professional home service or home care service or home health service or nurse. Frankly, he needs me, but I'm busy doing my own life and working. And so I thought, can I find someone similar to me to help him? And we came up with the concept to pair older adults with what we call Papa Pals. And today, Papa is a national network of tech-enabled companions that we call Pals that are available in all 50 states. And in 2023, we did almost 1.5 million visits across the US.
And tell us a little bit more about how you match people, because I can see how maybe there's, you know, someone who desiring companionship, but they're picky. You know, don't just send anyone to my house, right? Like send someone that I actually want to hang out with, and then vice versa on the other end. So how does it actually happen?
So it actually all starts off with choosing the right pal. And so we have a very strict onboarding process. It includes virtual AI chat-based interviews, very thorough background checks, ID verification, uploading of their profile, their car, motor vehicle record. So the first thing we try to do is look for what we call the pal kind of mole. This is a caring, friendly, mission-oriented individual. 80% of our pals are women. A good majority of them have healthcare experience, either professional or personal. Actually, most of them are what we call former family caregivers. And their average age is between 30 and 40 years old of age, which is a far enhancement from where we originally came, which was typically college students. So first and foremost, you want to choose the right pal. And we actually found that by choosing the right pal, the matching becomes much easier. But then, of course, there's preferences on both sides, as you mentioned. And so the pals actually in their area open up the app and can review profiles of members based on their background, their interests, and their things that they're looking to do at that day. For example, maybe some pals are better with telehealth or digital health, or some pals are, you know, more interested in driving, or some pals are just more interested in helping in the house or providing companionship conversation. Most of our members actually have a preferred pal. So the same pal comes over every week, every 2 weeks. Usually about 95% of the time, the first person you choose, if you do choose a preferred pal, becomes your preferred pal. And that has a lot to do with what I mentioned, which was choosing the right pal. And then once we've chosen the right pal to be on our platform, we match them to the members based on these cases.
Got it. And so I think the key phrase there is specific needs or interests, because I can imagine that curing loneliness is imprecise, right? Like through a platform such as this. Papas want their real grandson or granddaughter to be there because they are family, because they do have a unique connection that they can't have with anyone else. But maybe you're not trying to solve that particular problem. Is it the running errands? Is it the helping around the house? Like, how do we think about the portfolio of solutions that you're providing?
Yeah, so loneliness and isolation, these are leading indicators. It's kind of like cholesterol. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have a heart attack, but it's a leading indicator of a potential downstream negative impact. That's what we see with loneliness and isolation and generally social drivers of health. A pal helps with health-related social needs, but they're also a companion. And so it's one product, which is a human being that's super friendly and caring, comes to them, helps out. But most of the time what they're doing is hanging out, spending time with you, bringing a friend, helping with loneliness and isolation. But through that trust and relationship, we're able to help them in more ways, not only what they may want, which is really member-driven. Hey, can you take me to the grocery store? Or can you help me learn how to use my iPhone or Android device? Oh, I haven't gone to the grocery store in a while. Can you take me? You know, for example, that's kind of member-driven. Well, now we just released programs where health plans can actually ask us to do specific objectives that they care about. So this could be our STARS enhancement program. This could be our SDOH navigation program or a digital health literacy program, which each of them have specific objectives that a health plan may say, oh, I need to get my members to their annual wellness visit. I need to show them how to use their new FlexCard benefit. I need to get them to their grocery store. Oh, and by the way, I want to make sure they're really happy with my health plan. And I want to make sure we identify their social issues and close them. And so what we do at our core is build trusting relationships. And then we leverage those relationships in a very thoughtful and caring way to positively influence members' lives, oftentimes based on things that health plans, our customers that pay for the service on behalf of the members, care about. And so there's plan-driven programs and member-driven experience.
So I applaud you for getting this company started and off the ground. I think there's so many people out there that realize that this is a serious problem. They'll probably, you know, conversationally talking to their friends or family members saying like, you know what, like in a service like this should exist, right? But yeah. Like so few people will actually take the initiative and start a company to do it. And you've done it. You've got significant backing from notable investors. How hard has the journey been?
Very hard. It is not easy. It is not for the faint of heart. You know, I joke that it was just the only thing I ever really knew. My father is a multiple time, you know, founder and entrepreneur, some failures, some successes. My grandpa, Papa, was an entrepreneur. He owned his own construction company. And I realized actually that everyone blood related to me, every male blood related to me, is some sort of an entrepreneur. Jewelry owners, physician offices, tech companies. So it's all I ever knew. And so for me, I felt like it was just like kind of like part of the Parker family. You got to start a company. That said, I have four brothers. I'm the only one who decided to go down this path. And it is challenging. I mean, there are significant ups and downs, you know, the highs and lows, as you would expect. And I saw this thing Elon Musk said, which I thought was very fitting, is the CEO's job is not very fun because you are exclusively spending your time on the biggest problems. Because if it's working, you don't really need to spend all of your time on that. And so it can be stressful, but it's the life I chose. I will tell you, I wasn't this great a year and a half ago. So it's kind of some battle wounds that I'm honored to have.
What are you most proud of in terms of the person you've become? Like, as you reflect back on the journey so far, you've probably noticed things that have changed about you, maybe the way you approach problems, people, situation, et cetera. When you reflect back, what's the most notable thing you're proud of?
I think my constant willingness to evolve and learn. Honestly, coming into this space, I was pretty oriented around healthcare, decent orientation around tech, no idea how to manage people. Before Papa, I never had anyone to report to me ever. I think I had one intern, Andy, shout out to my first intern, who worked at Papa, by the way, for a while, not as an intern, but ultimately ran a portion of our sales ops. But what I've learned the most is just that you have to keep learning. I think I've been very fortunate to understand that surrounding myself by really talented people is key. You know, Jim Collins says, get the right people on the bus. I think that is incredibly smart. And you also have to self-reflect and know what you're not good at. I think I inherently understand what I'm not good at, which is a lot. I'm good at a few things and that's it. And I think that stayed with me, you know, since the beginning. The thing I'm most proud of is that I've maintained myself. I still feel like a goofy Andrew that I have been since I'm little. My brother jokingly said, Andrew was always, he used the word weird. Andrew was weird his whole life, and now being weird is cool. So Andrew is cool. So For me, that I think is something that I'm proud of, is throughout this journey, I try to remain myself and just continue to learn.
So you do not have the typical background, I would say, of a tech entrepreneur, meaning that you're from Florida.
That alone is crazy.
You didn't go to, I'd say, one of the tech-heavy schools that are popular, like, say, Stanford or MIT. So how did you get to where you are? You know, maybe we could talk about YC.
Yeah, I took a very different path only because I didn't know that there was this other path. And frankly, I wasn't qualified to get into any of these elite schools at the time. Maybe could have made a different effort, but that wasn't where I was at the time. And I went to Florida State University, which I'm proud to have gone there, but not many tech founders come out of there. I think the woman that started Spanx went there. So that's kind of cool, her and I, that created some larger companies. But you know, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I saw my family be entrepreneurs. I didn't learn from, you know, Silicon Valley. All I knew about Silicon Valley is, you know, what you would see on TV or read about. You know, none of my friends become tech entrepreneurs. I went to school for finance with the hope that I would learn a lot about what it takes to develop and work in and out of a business, because I did always want to be an entrepreneur. And I always had this obsession. And I honestly think obsession, addiction, obsession, passion, however you want to frame it, grit, these things are all required to be successful. And I think Y Combinator, to talk about that, has now realized how powerful that actually is. I think Paul Graham, PG, which I was very fortunate enough to spend quite a bit of time with him when we were in Y Combinator. He was retired, but you know, came to San Francisco for the summer I happened to be there. He had been 5 years out of YC, and he started to realize, you know, we used to only hire people if they went to an elite school, which is great. Very smart people, of course. And but what he found was grit to be maybe the most important thing. And I definitely always have had that as a kind of a natural thing throughout my life. I've done entrepreneurial things. One of the first entrepreneurial things I did was when I was younger, I always tried to figure out how to make an extra dollar, but I really was lazy. I didn't actually want to get a real job. And so Florida, a big thing that happens here every year, or quite a bit, is a hurricane. And so I would go to people's houses, knock door to door and say, hey, I will put up your hurricane shutters. Okay, great. And so I'd get two or three of my friends. We'd come over, we'd put up the hurricane shutters, we'd charge, you know, $300-$500. Well, we'd come back 2 weeks later, okay, hurricane's over, we will take those shutters down, but it's going to cost $1,000. We doubled the price. I felt a little bit bad about it, but this was some nice neighborhoods. And I think that was the beginning of my entrepreneurial journey. And so I think I took a different path only because I didn't know this other one existed. And then when I heard of Y Combinator, which I never heard of, I applied thinking there's no way I'm getting into Y Combinator. Like, as you mentioned, Stanford, MIT, people that, you know, built companies at Facebook, like things I can only dream of. I'm not an engineer by background. My co-founder wasn't an engineer. And so it was like a completely impossibility. And so we applied. I actually applied 2 weeks late because I uploaded the wrong video. I had to re-upload it and all these kind of crazy things. I just forgot about it. And then one day I'm going through my inbox and I'm deleting emails like you would in the morning, mostly junk. And I'm like, wait, did that say Y Combinator? I went into my delete inbox and it said, we're excited to interview you. And I call my co-founder, who I barely knew at the time. It's like 5 a.m. and his wife, who was like 8 months pregnant, why is Andrew calling you? Well, you know, we got some exciting news. And that was the day we started to understand, what is Y Combinator? Why could this be so important to us? And we decided if we don't get in, we're never going to be successful. We go into the interview and it is pretty intense. You know, there's hundreds and hundreds of people interview. I think thousands and thousands of people apply. I'm reading it's harder to get into YC than Harvard. And I'm like, this is impossible. I barely got into Florida State. Talk about Harvard. No offense. I think Florida State's amazing, but it's not as hard to get into some of these elite schools. Long story short, we go and do the interview. It was so intense. And then they made us wait around for 6 hours before they interviewed us a second time. And we're like, listen, they did not interview us a second time, so this must be good. And by the way, we have no context. I don't know who I'm interviewing. I later find out I interviewed the guy that invented Yahoo Mail that sold to Yahoo. And then I also interviewed with the guy that started Gmail. And like, these are like big wigs. But I just kind of put on my blinders, went in, and kind of my naivete, being naive, ended up being one of my largest superpowers in this moment, but also in many moments. And I think having like an unknown expectation actually gave me a strong footing in these things. We ended up getting into Y Combinator, and it was just a fantastic opportunity for us. And then we decided to move back to Miami, which is funny because everyone's like, you can't start a company in Miami. Miami Tech is not an existing thing. And I said, listen, this is where I want to live. This is where my team was. This is where my family is. And this is where I think I could start a company. By the way, MD Live, the telehealth company my dad started, was also started in South Florida. So we had some good history, at least in my personal experience. And then what's funny is, you know, fast forward, pandemic happened. A lot of people moved to Miami. The mayor of Miami said, we'll help, you know, move to Silicon Valley. Delian from Founders Fund at the time wrote that. And so Miami Tech became a big thing. And now I'm the token Miami Tech guy, which I'm proud of.
So do you think in the application process, what were they honing in on? Was it your grit, your demonstrated grit, or was it, I mean, it's probably a combination of both, but was it this massive market that you could potentially address?
I would say it was more the grit, to be honest. And again, I'm no expert here, so this is just my personal opinion, is I think Y Combinator bets on the founders more than they bet on the idea. And I think that's the right move. In Y Combinator, I applied twice, actually. So the first time I applied, no response, nothing, just, you know, thanks, you didn't get in. I read that if you apply twice and you show progress, that shows, you know, grit. I guess that's a good way to show grit from a distance. And we did that. I mean, when we applied to Y Combinator, the first time we had $0 in revenue, we had a cool idea, I had some background in healthcare. When we applied a second time, still on the same idea, I think I got up to $10,000 in monthly revenue. You know, that was 90 days later. Wow, maybe, you know, this company could figure something out. And, you know, this is an interesting idea. And oh, and by the way, you know, there's a huge market in healthcare that's on tap, which is the older adult space. So I think those things combined, it definitely wasn't that I went to Florida State.
Thinking of all your strengths and what you need to be a good entrepreneur, you clearly have an ability to speak and to sell. You know, there's some founders who are very good on product. There's some who are very good on operations. Where would you put yourself in terms of your biggest strength?
Working at MD Live at a company that was hyperscaling with a very small group of people, I learned a lot about everything. I learned about product. I learned about technology, infrastructure, security, just because there was a gap that we had at MD Live and I was just, you know, trying to solve what at the time was selling. But for me, selling was at the time 10% of it, 90% of what I was doing is making sure the sale could go through by helping with all these other components, which frankly is a big part of what you do as a CEO. So I went through this like CEO training unintentionally and came out of it and realized, wow, I learned how to do this and this and that. So I think my real core skill is scrappiness. And I do think of myself historically as a good representative of product, but actually now more today, fast forward almost 6 years plus into Papa, I'd say I spend a good majority of my time inside Papa versus selling customers. I do always join meetings, you know, if helpful, and I'll represent Papa in podcasts like I'm doing here in different ways, but I'm still that component. But I do like spending a lot of time because we feel at Papa, if you could build a platform of super high quality, super safe, super engaging human beings and provide human connection at scale, and then layer on top of that what we're calling phase two, which is programmatically solving healthcare problems, that will sell itself. And we maybe don't need to be selling so much, you know, in the traditional sense. So we want to be more consultative with our clients and understand their needs. So it's spanned, but definitely to be a CEO, I think it is required mostly to represent your product, tell the story about your product, engage both the outside world and maybe even more importantly, and probably more importantly, the inside world, which is really your team and people. Because when it comes down to this, this is people, you know, building things for other people. And so to be able to engage those and get them to join this pretty tough journey. It's not just tough for me, it's tough for everyone at Papa to help the world, but we're very proud of what we're doing.
So we're running up on time. I have two final questions, but before I ask that one, I'd like to touch on one aspect is that you've brought in significant capital from great investors. You know, there might be other entrepreneurs out there that are contemplating raising more capital or maybe diversifying out their shareholder base. What's been kind of the nice benefits of some of the investors that are backing you?
Choosing the right people is so critical. This is so hard. And if you think about, forget about Papa, what's happened in the world the last few years is intense. You know, the pandemic, the economy, the world, wars, to name a few. So it's pretty crazy. And so just people that you can trust and can talk to you through these things and these moments. And, you know, I think they say like the road to the top is a squiggly line. I think that's generally true. We may from the outside think things look better or worse than they are, but no matter what, everyone has their own journey. And so I think choosing right investors is critical. And you know, you can't always know like what is someone going to do in these situations later on. So you got to have a proxy for those things. That's one. And also having different perspectives, because you're going to get a lot of views and probably a lot of them are right, a lot of them are wrong. It's not about that necessarily. It's to take that and create your own algorithm and, you know, have an idea of how to go forward and enhance it over time. But we have finance perspective, we have product perspective, we have healthcare perspective, we have kind of general marketplace perspective, we have operational efficiency perspective, and then just general strategy. And so I was very thoughtful about selecting these people that when I need help with finance, I call this person. When I need help with operations, I call this person. When I need help with sales, I call that person. And I think that's really, really critical. So choose the right people, have various perspectives, and recognize that they're going to be with you hopefully through ups and downs, and hopefully more ups than downs. But regardless, it's part of the journey.
Okay, last two questions. One is, can you tell us about a person who has had a profound influence on you?
My dad. My dad has had an incredible influence. Growing up, Dad, don't be offended by this, but he was a tough guy. If you're listening, he probably is. And I think I always wanted to be my dad, to be honest, and just effectively become like 2.0 version of him. It's just cool to have this person that you can talk through all these things with, who's your dad. So, you know, ideally, you know, have that relationship with them, but also had true experience that you're going through. It's not that normal. And I'm very honored to get to have him in my life.
Are there some kind of meta pieces of advice that he's given you, or when you speak with him more regularly, is it more tactical?
It's generally tactical. And then he'll randomly say things. And he's a funny dude. He'll say, there's three rules of business. Don't run out of money. So like that type of great advice is helpful, especially as he told me these things before the whole world, you know, more recently started to realize that. I use the joke, we're not that great of an athletic family. My brother was generally athletic, but mostly we're not. My dad didn't teach me how to play football, but he did teach me EBITDA. So some of these like older school methodologies, which are becoming back in vogue. And then tactical. Hey, I want to raise money from them. What do you think about these terms? What do you think about that terms? Hey, I want to go to a health plan since he was in a similar business. How do you think we should structure the deal? Oh, I just talked to this person. And by the way, you know, he was doing the same thing 10 years ago or even longer than that. So he knows them and worked with them. So he may have like very tactical. Oh, if you call Mike, don't do this or do that, you know? So it's just really good having him on my side and having someone that has gone through the emotional components and he's seen the failures and the successes. So
last question, can you tell us about a charity, cause, or other endeavor that you're passionate about?
In general, Alzheimer's, and I think what's interesting about Alzheimer's, and frankly, I need to do a lot more, so I don't feel like I'm the number one charitable person here, but so I don't want to take false credit, but I do think that's an area that I would like to dive in more. What's interesting about it is something like breast cancer gets like some specific number more, but like orders of magnitude more funding. Well, if you have breast cancer, maybe you could represent yourself in a 5K or something like that. You know, maybe you can't, but with Alzheimer's, likely you are at home because you may not be able to care for yourself. The awareness, which has gotten much better, it just isn't as strong as it could be. And so I'm hopeful to be able to help in that way, both with Papa, but honestly more personally.
Excellent. Well, Andrew, want to thank you again for taking the time. This has been a wonderful conversation.
Thank you, RJ. Thank you so much.